I feel that my work was betrayed.
Who have all the fury which Didier Drogba is directing at the referee now.
There obviously seem to be a palpable discord between manager and players.
Hello and welcome back to Palpable Discord, the Chelsea podcast. I'm your host, Jack Rathbone, and I'm joined as always by Will Debay and Grant James. We'll be discussing the big news this week at Chelsea. Frank Lampard is no longer the manager of Chelsea, 18 months on after rejoining the club. It's all over. It's ended in tears, as many feared it might. We're just going to kick it off straight away and discuss how his time at Stamford Bridge ended, whether it was harsh, the future obviously under Thomas Tuchel, and we'll touch on the game against Wolves on Wednesday. But to kick it off, Grant, your instant reaction when you heard the news?
Look, I was slightly surprised, not that Chelsea would sack Lampard, but at the timing of it. I know that a lot of media houses had started leaking stories that he was going to be fired, but considering they waited past the FA Cup game, there's a game on Wednesday that is pretty winnable, and we haven't actually necessarily had the best preparation now for that. I just thought it was slightly surprising, but having said that, I've thought all along that regardless of whether he does turn the results around and get the club back into the top four race, that this sort of bad spell would have made the board's mind up that he's not the right man long term, and eventually he would have been fired anyway, possibly even after a good run of results or things were even looking slightly on the up. I just think they would have decided then that he wasn't the right person. And my initial reaction was some regret. Obviously that club legend that was they were all very excited to have managing the club has been fired, just like any other manager would have been. And also that considering that there's a reasonable fixture list ahead, things could have looked so different just if we'd just given him another 3 or 4 games. And yeah, people would say, well, that, you know, that would just paper over any cracks in his in the team he's created or in his actual abilities as a manager. But I just still feel that if maybe we'd won the next 2 or 3 league matches and we were not far fourth, things just, you know, the perception changes quickly in football. I mean, it wasn't long ago Chelsea were top on the 5th of December and Arteta was, you know, on a terrible run. I think it was 1 win in 10 league matches he had, and he's turned it around. So, yeah, and obviously sadness because for our generation, you know, Lampard is just a Chelsea icon. And we sort of mentioned today that when it's your era's icon, you can understand a lot more. You know, if I'm sure for fans, if, you know, Pat Nevin had been appointed or, you know, Kerry Dixon and he was fired, a lot of us wouldn't have felt the same level of sadness necessarily because we don't have the same level of affiliation to them as players because they were different eras. So, yeah, I mean, sadness, but also glad we waited a day to record because, you know, things do settle down a little bit emotionally and you don't necessarily just react straight away. So it's more like this is like the measured Palpable Discord podcast, I think.
Yeah, I think you're quite right. I think as this podcast began, Chelsea actually confirmed the news that Tuchel has joined. But before we move on to Tuchel, Will, I think it is right that Grant mentions calming down a little bit, 24 hours removed from the announcement. How do you summarise his period in charge at Chelsea? And also, if you analyse his recent form, I mean, is there a justification? I mean, we're looking at the table right now and there's a 9-point difference to Leicester. Obviously, there's 5 to Liverpool. So technically, 5 points to top 4 is a very attainable. You can bridge that gap, certainly with half a season to go, but it is Liverpool. So it's a tall ask. Do you think this situation is salvageable and could it eventually end up being a prudent move by Abramovich to salvage Champions League football? I think that maybe would justify the decision. Do you agree?
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. I think, like Grant mentioned, the next few fixtures are quite favourable, if you apart from Tottenham away, which is obviously tricky. I think it's just a case of we'll have to see, you know, how the results pan out. I think Frank had a good chance of potentially accumulating a decent amount of points in the next few games. So it's a little bit frustrating, the timing. But I don't know. I think that I sort of said a few weeks ago, I think it was before the Fulham game, I think the writing was on the wall. I think when you start to see a few journalists that are relatively sound in their reporting, you know, I think a lot of them were, well, a handful of them were reporting that he was kind of already gone. I think probably the reason he still stayed on to manage the Luton game was, you know, probably just finalising things with the new manager. So, yeah, it's frustrating and it's sad. I mean, it's frustrating. He doesn't have a trophy to you know, say he won a trophy. I think that Arsenal final becomes even more frustrating now. And I just think Frank could never quite build a side, really. And I think part of that is his fault. I think he made some questionable decisions along the way. Part of it is poor squad building. And, you know, Frank will take some of the brunt of that. But I do think, you know, it was reported that I think he definitely wanted Declan Rice in the summer. You could see that we wanted to bring in a defensive midfielder and a centre-back to address some of the lack of balance in the squad. And, you know, the squad's massively top heavy. It's massively bloated. And it's caused problems. It seems like it's caused problems in the camp. We can get on to, you know, some of those problems maybe a bit later on. But it's a shame, really, because I felt like for all the inconsistency last year, you could kind of see the style of play Frank was trying to play, especially in the early stages of the season where we were really up and down, but it was exciting. You know, high pressing, moving the ball quickly, lots of young players, lots of enthusiasm. And I think really last season, even though we were massively up and down, it was sort of an easier squad to handle in that it wasn't bloated. You know, he was rotating, chopping and changing a lot. And I think that's because no real consistent performers really emerged, with the exception of maybe, you know, a few, Kante, Mount, but even they were up and down. And then we briefly stumbled across something that worked this season, which led to us sort of topping the league. But it didn't last long. And I think the main reason it didn't last long is because Kante was missing the last few weeks. And I just think it's crazy, I think, how reliant we are on him to obviously play and play well. And I just think that there's not really anyone in the squad that can deputise and do what he does. I think we were playing at that 4-3-3 that was, you know, two sort of attacking tens, very pushed high up the pitch, and Kante was putting out fires left, right and centre and playing really well. I think once he got injured, it was very difficult for Frank to then find a solution. There were no real good answers to that question. And I think we just ended up going back to periods of last season where we looked really poor in defensive transitions and easy to open up. So I think that's a big part of it. I think Kante still paints over lots of cracks in the squad. So I think that while we might have a bit of an uplift with the new manager, I think, you know, those sort of problems, unless they're addressed in the transfer market, they're going to start to rear their head pretty soon again. So, yeah, that's kind of where I am on it.
Yeah, I'll take your points on board, Will. I think, obviously, emotionally, it's very disappointing to see arguably the greatest player in the club's history fail as a manager, and notably not having that trophy, I think is pretty cruel. I think that final would have been a really nice consolation, no matter how it ended for him. But one of the main frustrations for me, if you analyse the situation, is that I think he's been grossly unlucky and unfortunate in terms of how it's unravelled. Because last season, obviously, a lot was made about the transfer ban. But to me, the hardest part was taking over a team, which, I mean, you can argue about N'Golo Kante, but I think to have the one or the one of two world-class players removed from it in Eden Hazard, I think it was always going to take a little while to rebuild. And it's proven the case with pretty much every Premier League side that has had the luxury of having a world-class player. So to rebound pretty smoothly without Hazard, I think was admirable, not to mention how he did it with a lot of the academy's players. So that in itself was a positive, but to not only do that, but to scrape into the top four, I think was certainly an achievement. I think you have to look in isolation and not compare it to previous seasons under Chelsea. And this is obviously a different era, not just at Chelsea, but in the Premier League too, with the way that the talent pool is now not just condensed into four or five teams, but over six or seven. So I think the competition is much stronger. So to get top four in that first season, I think was a real bonus. And you could argue that had he got fifth, then maybe the diary is a bit more clear this season. You can work on the team. You can work on patterns of play a little more than he has been able to. So that arguably has gone against him, the way that he had to cope with Champions League football in back-to-back-to-back weeks, the back end of 2020. But he coped pretty well, I thought, in the Champions League, learned a lot of lessons from last season. And the way that Chelsea sort of swept that group, even though it was a favourable group, I think is pretty impressive. The Sevilla win obviously stands out. But then you look at you both mentioned it, the top-heavy imbalance of the squad. I think any manager would really struggle to not just cope, but thrive with that type of squad, because not only is it top-heavy, but you've seen pretty much all of the key players at any one point have been unavailable. So he's never had a core of what he would argue to be his best team available to him. Obviously, an accusation levelled at Lampard is that he doesn't know what his best team was, but it's pretty hard to decipher what that is when you have Kai Havertz going down with COVID, Ziyech picking up injuries, Pulisic picking up injuries, Kante picking up injuries, Eduard Mendy joining late, Thiago Silva joining late, Ben Chilwell picking up an injury just as he joins and not being able to come into the side until the third or fourth game. So, I mean, there's six or seven potential starters straight away, which have really hurt his chances of finding any sort of continuity or integrating the ideas that he wanted to get across. And then, like you mentioned, Will, I think the Kante reliance, the imbalance of the squad, I think that has really hurt him in terms of a lack of alternative options. What do you think about the misfortune, Grant, that Lampard has suffered? And do you think that circumstances in some way contrived to basically make the job nigh impossible towards the end?
Yeah, it does seem like it. And you mentioned all the disruption we had in preseason. We also had 10 players in a 2-week quarantine. Obviously, preseason in its entirety, I think it was 5 weeks between the season ending and the new season starting. And there was a 2-week international break before the first game. So you essentially had 3 weeks to rest and have preseason. And then if 2 weeks of those, you have 10 players, you know, just at home, not training, because they all were around people with COVID or had COVID. It was extremely disrupted, an extremely disrupted start to the season. But I'm not looking at it with, you know, rose-tinted glasses. I mean, Lampard obviously made a lot of mistakes, but when he was appointed, the context that I gave is that Chelsea are going to give a lot of young players a chance. No one expects Mason Mount to be the finished article in his first season, or Abraham and Tomori and all these youngsters that got a chance. No one even expects that from the young players we sign now. Yes, they should be doing better, people will say, but no one expects them to be in their peak now. And that sort of is not really extended to managers very often. So my hope was that he would come in and develop on the job. That was obviously what was needed. If he came in and that was as good as he was ever going to get, then obviously that would be concerning. And I think he did improve, but possibly not quick enough. You know, he made a lot of mistakes last season that he's repeated this season. Some of those in terms of leaving out players that are in form, they didn't seem to be real merit in his selections. Having said that, there were issues last season that he's improved this season. Last year, we had a ridiculous number of muscle injuries. And this season, we've had very few. I mean, Kante's played practically every game this season until he picked up an injury. But he said that he'd adapted his training, eased it off a bit, and he managed to keep him fit, which was both an admission of his errors last season, although he probably didn't see it that way. Publicly, he didn't admit he'd done any wrong, but he'd sort of more claim credit for keeping Kante fit by adjusting his training. And we haven't generally had a lot of injuries this term. I mean, we've generally, I think we've had pretty much a full strength squad in the last few weeks, just the one or two odd injuries. It's not been half, you know, numerous players missing long stretches like it was last season. But yeah, it does feel like he both did things his way and kind of went out, you know, on his own terms, and also didn't quite do that. Like he said, I think you remember when Villas-Boas was sacked, Lampard said, you know, he played his cards and it just, you know, he played his hand and didn't fall for him and he wasn't experienced enough. And I feel like Lampard sort of played his hand, but also didn't. Like he, there's a lot of players in that squad he clearly wouldn't want to be part of the picture. And then also he deserves stick for persisting with those players last season. He played Jorginho, he made him vice captain. And this season, and then sort of after the restart, he didn't want him, but he came back into the picture because the squad was weak in that area. So he, his hands were tied. But this season, he's played him quite a lot, in the at least in the first few games of the season. And it just feels like there's players he clearly didn't quite fancy, but kept selecting. So he did have a tough job trying to play the politics of keeping people happy, keeping players' values up, you know, not disrupting the dressing room by, say, for example, leaving Kepa in the stands or leaving Jorginho out of the squad, or leaving Rudiger out of the squad very much once this window had closed now. So he kind of got stuck between trying to keep people happy and do his own thing. And I think he'll probably end up leaving with some regret that he didn't just properly do it his way this season and just leave some of those players out completely, instead of trying to keep everyone happy, because it didn't work in the end. If you read all the press reports, there was a load of unhappy players in the dressing room. So maybe if he just made it obviously clear that these players were completely not in his plans, and for example, if he hadn't recalled Rudiger 3 weeks after the transfer window closed, hadn't upgraded him to third choice, he may have had a very unhappy figure on his hands, but the club would probably have sorted out a move for January instead of, you know, had this sort of festering, you know, all through this month. So yeah, he's made loads of errors, and I'm sure we'll go into some things we all think, and I've got a lot, you know, like a list of things. From a Lampard perspective, I hope he does take another job and we actually see what he can become, because he could become another Gary Neville who just goes back into the media side of things. His wife's expecting a baby in 4 or 5 months' time. So, you know, maybe he focuses on other things and, you know, his management career drifts along. But he was never that type of character as a player. So hopefully he'll have a point to prove and we'll see what he does next.
I think where I've got quite a lot of sympathy for Frank is, really, if you look at the squad, the player, the age profile of the players that you'd expect to be at their peak, and really in a squad where you've got your players at peak age, you want them to be your best performers, your most reliable players. And I think with us, you know, this season the most reliable players have probably been the young players and the academy players and Thiago Silva, and obviously Kante, who's a world-class player. But you know, if you look at Jorginho, Rudiger, Alonso, Emerson, Christensen to a certain degree, who's experienced now, as far as I'm concerned, they haven't performed well. And then also when you throw into the mix Ziyech, new player but very experienced, he's been up and down, he's had injuries, they've been a bit lucky to have him injured. That on top of the two big money signings, that you've brought in, they've really struggled. Obviously, we mentioned Havertz has had COVID, but he struggled generally with his play. And I don't think anyone could have quite anticipated how poor Timo Werner would be. So, you know, in terms of players that have performed well, none of the experienced players have really delivered. And I'm not just talking about this season. I just think a lot of them just haven't been good enough. They've been bad signings. If you look at Jorginho, £60 million on, in my view, a very limited average midfielder. Kovacic, who is very talented, you know, years gone by, he would have been a steady squad player, something like that. But, you know, he's not someone you can rely upon. You know, he spent £70 million on Kepa, which was another challenge for Frank last season, him costing us loads of points and then, you know, being unhappy in and around the squad. And I think, It was clear that I think Frank came to the conclusion that a lot of those players he wanted out. I don't think it was any secret that Jorginho was available to clubs, Rudiger was available to clubs, Alonso and Emerson were available to clubs. Kepa, for me, had to be moved on. I don't know whether, you know, and I think he was also available. And, you know, you've obviously got to take factor in the, you know, the context of the current climate of COVID, but the board didn't do their job in getting rid of a lot of these players. So not only was this squad bloated, but top heavy. And I just think, you touched on it, Grant, at the start of the season, it felt like this season, it was almost like he was starting all over again. And it was a case of, we didn't get rid of the players that we needed to. He's been unlucky with the way that the new big money signings have performed. And, you know, it seems as though that's led to a lot of disruption in the squad, you know, reading reports of experienced players, you know, being quite resentful of the young players. I mean, I think that's bizarre. That's not the situation that you would expect to happen in any circumstance. You know, you don't want a load of players sitting around in the squad who expect to play every week, you know, sort of being spiteful about young players who are outperforming them. It's just a very bizarre situation. And I don't think any manager would really cope well in that situation. But as you touched on, I don't think Frank did himself favours in some scenarios. I think we can talk about the centre-backs. I mean, I think they've all, over the space of 18 months, taken turns in being either first choice or fifth choice. So I don't think that helps. I think that shows a little bit of weakness. But then saying that, I think that's also in part because none of them have really consistently performed well enough to stay in the team for a run. So, yeah, I think we're still addressing a lot of the mistakes we've made in the transfer market. And I think whoever the manager is, they're gonna eventually find, you know, themselves in a similar situation to Frank.
Yeah, I'm sure we're gonna finish off with talking, you know, about the positives he's actually done, you know, in the job with the young players. But I mean, this might be the last chance we get to actually go through his reign in depth. You know, we might reference things, but for that reason, like, you know, I did keep kind of a list of things, mistakes that Lampard made, and it wasn't because I was sort of boating up some sort of, you know, agenda, as you, the stupid word you hear on Twitter. It was just that he was a developing coach, so I wanted to keep things that I thought he'd done wrong and then see how those developed and how he ironed out those issues. And I mean, for example, last season, he had a tough time keeping some players involved. There was a period where Giroud and Pedro didn't play for months on end. And then kind of out of the blue, they started a Premier League match against West Ham, even though we had a League Cup game just before that and they hadn't featured. I think the Giroud usage in general was a bit of a problem. I mean, he barely played him at all in the first 25 games. And then he came back in after the restart and scored in, eight of his 10 starts or 10 of his 13 starts, something crazy. And he'd been picking Batshuayi for some reason, which, you know, looking back was madness. And I think some of that inexperience as well came through in the first half of the season where he overplayed Abraham and he overplayed Willian and he overplayed Pulisic as well. I mean, he had that little break and then he had a long spell just playing and playing and playing. And then he eventually broke down. And there were little issues like, you know, the positives of switching to a back three for certain games and, you know, surprising everyone by playing a back three at Wolves and thrashing them at Molineux, or going to a back three away at Spurs and just surprising Mourinho completely. And probably for me, like the highlight of his entire reign, that win at White Hart Lane and the manner of it. But then keeping the back three for subsequent games and us just looking completely clueless because it wasn't suited to the next opposition. And then we also know that he had this issue of like sort of ditching players, clearly sort of not favouring them, but then bringing them back. I think he ditched like Alonso three times. The start of the season, he was nowhere and completely Emerson was number one. And then Alonso came in and started like 10 matches in a row and then had a bad game and was ditched again. And he sort of like kept doing that. He got ditched after the West Ham game where he was blamed for not getting back quickly enough. But then he finished the season as first choice again. And I mean, that happened to Zuma. Zuma had a spell out of the team after playing great. And Tomori also had a spell out of the team where, you know, he played really well for a long time and then vanished. Hudson-Odoi went 10 weeks without a start at one point after how well he started after he came back from injury, how sharp he looked in those first few matches back, you know, picking up assists against Newcastle and Southampton and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, Jorginho obviously got ditched after the restart, and he moved with to the 4-3-3, and even Gilmore was ahead of him, but eventually went back to him. So there was lots of issues. I mean, there were a couple of weird games where he played Pulisic and as a false nine, chasing a game against West Ham, Willian as a false nine away at Leicester, for a period in the game, which felt sort of like messages that he didn't have the backup strikers he needed. So yeah, I'm going through a lot of negatives, but I think it's important because, you know, there's always a chance of being accused of not being fair in our judgments of him. And I think we've generally been relatively critical, but also really praised him when he's done well. So it's important to mention these things. Even this season at the start, you know, playing Havertz and Mount on the wing for the first couple of games, that was just bizarre. And Ruben Loftus-Cheek sort of coming in from the cold and playing. So yeah, there were plenty of issues. Also, I think probably the biggest one for me, that aside from the overtraining and the injuries, and was I think the lack of in-game management. I think that's why sometimes when a really experienced head on the bench, even someone like Eddie Newton, who was maybe forced on Lampard, but who really was just, you know, sidelined, often sat in the stands when there weren't enough spaces on the bench. Having someone like that just next to him, just to say, you know, maybe we can shut up shop here, or maybe we need to throw on, you know, switch to a back five and see this game out. I think that would have helped, because he's so insular. His staff was so similar to him and so like-minded. There was no one to challenge him. And you need that as an experienced coach, and even more so as a young coach. I just think, like, he came, Lampard as a person comes across as so self-confident that he maybe doesn't question himself enough, you know, and without staff members to do that is kind of confirmation bias, you know, like, of his ideas.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned confirmation bias. Less said about that, maybe the better. But on that coaching staff, I think it's interesting you mentioned the lack of ideas in and around him. I think you're right that certainly that basically produced an environment which lacked a productive debate and conversation. But on Frank and his excuses when things did go wrong, I think one thing that hasn't been touched on just yet is the fact that he probably did alienate certain factions of the dressing room with his very severe and ultimately quite rash accusations of lack of effort. I think just a human instinct is obviously not going to react well to that. I just wondered, Will, what were your thoughts on that? It's a very risky tactic, isn't it, to basically accuse very very experienced professionals of lacking the requisites to be a top level player. I thought at that point there's usually only one way this goes, and when you question the effort and the professionalism of certain players, it's hard to stop it unraveling from there.
Yeah, I think obviously this is just a theory, but just take into account some of the interviews and obviously some of the, you know, like Grant said, being hot on players and then going very cold on them. I get the sense that there's something in it that with the type of player Frank was, we know Mourinho's talked about him being the best professional he's ever worked with. Hugely driven, just, you know, constant, just getting every last ounce out of what he can get out of his talent. And I think, you know, it's sort of something that I think Roy Keane sort of mentioned. I think there's probably other reasons why Roy Keane never made it as a manager if you listen to some of his punditry. But I think in large part, it was kind of a little bit of a, you know, resentment and a kind of not understanding why players are not applying themselves as sort of professionally as he was. And I think maybe that's led to some issues. Again, it's just a theory, but I do get the sense that, you know, there's an element to his management where it's like the players need to take responsibility. The players need to take responsibility. And I think that's true. And I think he was obviously a player that always took responsibility. And I think even now, obviously, you know, he's not been long retired, but the game does change. And I think, you know, the type of players in dressing rooms now is probably a little bit different to when he was there. You know, I think I sort of said the other day, like, we used to be a circus that won, and now we're just a circus. And I think that's in large part down to, you know, the experienced players. I have to go back to it. Like, the experienced players we have now are not good enough to play for Chelsea if we want to get back into winning big trophies. I think, you know, when we had that great dressing room, we had a world-class spine. You know, we were happy to part with the circus. And to be honest with you, when players sort of kind of did down tools, they were usually pretty correct to do so, because the managers were, you know, really didn't perform well and kind of didn't go on to really perform well after they left Chelsea. So it's interesting. We don't know that, but my instinct is that was part of the issue, that he's probably still kind of learning how to navigate management in that way and sort of deal with players in that way. I think with the young players, they run through brick walls for him. They were just so, you know, buzzing to be playing at the top level. And I also think they've got great attitudes, the players that come out of Cobham. So, you know, I think he started to lean towards them, but I just wish he would have maybe been a bit stronger and kind of discarded those experienced players and just go, look, you know, fuck it. Like, it's up to the board. I've got to get rid of them. I'm not going to play them. I'm going to go with these players, but it's difficult. It's easier said than done. Dressing rooms are really complicated. So.
Yeah. Do you know what you say? Like, on the old guard, like, I think, you know, we had such a strong dressing room, so it was easy to manage, you know, the dressing room yourself. But it also felt like maybe aside from the AVB one, because that one felt quite self-serving for the individuals. Lampard and Ashley Cole had been left out in Napoli, and, you know, that might have been more self-interest than club interest involved with that one. But the other ones, you generally felt that the players wanted success for the club, and they were not going to just, like, sit back and wait for things to turn to shit until they fired the coach. They were sort of like being proactive and just saying, you know, we'll stage a coup, basically. We'll get someone else in and we'll win something this season, instead of just letting our careers sort of peter out. And that comes from Mourinho and from a lot of guys not being winners at the start of the Abramovich reign, and they just sort of became addicted to it. Now I think the dressing room is just self-serving. I don't think anyone besides the academy players generally care too much about the club more than themselves. So that's never going to really happen like that. You know, like, I think Lampard, even if it's just for lip service, he should have realized that you have to be clever and just say, oh, it's my fault for the defeat today, and let your weak dressing room, you know, just sit back and not feel that pressure. Or it's a difficult one.
Especially Frank of the old guard. Frank performed under every single manager apart from AVB. But I mean, AVB just discarded him and benched him randomly. But every single manager, even when we were really struggling, think about Scolari when it was a mess. Frank was our best player. He was like dragging us out of situations that whole season. So I think he always really, really gave everything under every manager. So, no, yeah, I take your point there.
Okay, so to summarise on Lampard's reign at Chelsea, I thought it'd be nice to bounce some ideas on the best moments at the club, obviously lacking that signature trophy victory, I think. But Grant, what would stand out to you as your favourite moment? Maybe a game or a particular goal? Anything that stands out?
I think the two matches that come to mind are the way win at Spurs. Just everything about it, the celebrations at full time, you know, having these young players in the side play so well, the energy of Mount and Abraham in attack that day, and Tomori playing at the back. For me, that was probably the best game, although another game that I think I might look back on more fondly, and as time goes on, is the FA Cup semi-final against Man United, for a few reasons. Firstly, because of the pragmatism in that result. Obviously, switching to a back three, matching up to them, being fairly solid and defensive. But also something we haven't seen that much of is Lampard extremely animated on the touchline, organising guys, shouting, you know, to guys into position and encouraging the pressing constantly from Willian and Mount that day. I don't think we've seen that a lot more, and I thought that might be sort of like a tipping point for that from him, because I think it brought something out of the players that day to have him cajoling their every effort. And it does feel slightly maybe I'm completely wrong, but it does feel slightly like that Spurs and the United games were not just memorable moments, but also games that Lampard was so up for. And that's why he was so animated on the touchline and full time. And maybe we needed more of that. Like, not all the time, you know, maybe not Conte levels of animation or Benitez levels of micromanagement, but just occasionally more games where he was on the player's case all the time, like in a home game against West Ham or Southampton when we're losing, or a game like that. So I think those would be the games. And I think the overall highlight is the development of the young players, especially because they look so good now. I think if you had to order our players in the best performance, actual performance this season, you'd have James, Mount, and probably Abraham in the top five or six. And that's really, I think that's a massive testament to the opportunity they were given, and almost certainly wouldn't have been given under Sarri if he'd stayed in charge. And it's not as if players are just good enough and they will eventually arise, because, you know, there's sort of like a watershed moment when a player is just ripe for the opportunity to develop. And if you miss it, often he just stagnates and it falls away. So I don't think you can say these players would have emerged now anyway if Lampard hadn't taken over, because they're just so good. So I think that's the highlight. And I think it's almost, you know, Mason Mount captaining the side in the last match was almost like a crowning moment, not because, and especially because it wasn't just for show. It wasn't, you know, just showing how good the academy is. It was because he genuinely deserved it, because he had been playing like a captain this season, and in recent weeks he'd been the example to all of his teammates. So I think that's probably the abiding memory I'd have of Lampard's reign, is these opportunities for the youngsters, but also some regret because he kind of played them a lot less after the restart last year, and he went with more experience. And even in the Fulham game, he kind of fell back on the experienced players, and I feel like maybe he should have fallen back on Gilmore and, you know, Hudson-Odoi and stuff in those games. And if we could have been fired anyway, well, at least he did it playing the kids. So maybe he did lose a bit of his bottle. But that would be it for me.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think you're not wrong about the Tottenham victories. I think certainly they stand out as the pinnacle of being big wins, but also including massive contributions from the youth team players that have graduated over the last 18 months. I think you can also sling in the Man City home win. I think that's in that same sort of category, to obviously outplay City at times during that game and get the win. I thought that was massive. But I've got two groups of two games, if that makes sense, which kind of defined both where Chelsea were before Lampard's return and then also where they're going, I guess. Obviously, it's really nice to get back in the Champions League. Obviously, last season, I think, a reminder of just where Chelsea belong and those big nights in Europe, I think, was really refreshing to see the win at Ajax. I think last season that was a massive win. I thought really did sort of show the potential of this team, because Ajax, obviously coming off the previous season, were one of the best teams in Europe. That was really a standout moment to me. And then this season, obviously at Sevilla, another, I'd say a top 10 team in Europe over the previous 12 months. So that was to outplay them and absolutely wipe the floor with them. That was really impressive. But two much I guess, less illustrious opponents, but also equally really encouraging two standout victories to me were the Norwich and Wolves away wins. I think, granted, Chelsea should always be winning those sorts of games, but to see Abraham get a double in the win at Norwich City and Mason Mount scoring as well, just sort of blending the potential that this team under Lampard did have. And then obviously at Wolves, you saw Tomori's goal from about 25 yards, and then Abraham's hat-trick, Mason Mount also scoring, to have all the youth team players involved at one point. I thought that was really refreshing to see. So those would be my standout moments. How about you, Will?
Well, you guys haven't left me with much, have you? it's difficult for me to add anything. You both summarised it really well, I think. For me, the Tottenham game, like you said, I think it showed showcased a lot of the pragmatism that Frank showed at times, I think, to change the system. It became a little bit frustrating at times. But then also, I think it was like last season, there wasn't a lot between the group of players. So it was about Frank kind of finding solutions game to game. So I think that that win was great. And obviously the Arsenal win, when we came back from 1-0 down, Tammy's goal. I was at both of those games, and it was carnage when when Tammy's goal went in. I think the Ajax one's a good shout, Jack. It was such an exciting, it was such a mad game, and it was kind of typical of, you know, all the young players being quite naive but playing with freedom. It was a very naive performance, but we played some great stuff, and it was obviously against the previous year's finalists, so it was or semi-finalists, so it was it felt like a big Champions League night at Stamford Bridge, which we haven't had for years, so that was great. There have been some good moments, they really have, and I think last season he did a really good job to get top four, get to the FA Cup final, with considering the circumstances, so we shouldn't forget that. It's just a shame. I do think if there were fans in the stadium, you can imagine this period where we've struggled and where Frank's been under pressure. You imagine the atmosphere. I think everyone would have been so behind him, every single fan in the stadium. And that, you know, who knows, that might have played a bit of a part and a difference in some of the results that we've seen. So, I think you've both summed up pretty well there.
Yeah, and just one thing. I mean, I think if there was one standout image, it's that image of Reece James celebrating his goal against Ajax. You've got Tomori and Abraham. You've got Hudson-Odoi in the background. It's just, it just felt like them arriving on the real top level. And so, it's kind of sad that, it's pretty sad now, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. I think it's just a sense of not knowing, I think, is what really grinds with me. I think no matter what some people say, I think, there's going to be an element of doubt forever now with Lampard's career, no matter what he goes on to achieve, because there was a real opportunity for him to sort of ride the difficult period here and then see what he had in the summer. I think it's just a bit sad, isn't it, that it ended how it was. But I mean, football doesn't stop, does it? Chelsea are playing tomorrow against Wolves, a must-win game. There's a new manager who's taking training right now. Thomas Tuchel will be in the dugout tomorrow, signed an 18-month contract. It's quite an interesting appointment, I think. And while I didn't agree with the decision to get rid of Lampard, I think Chelsea have almost lucked into such an easy appointment to get somebody of his calibre free and hungry to prove himself after being ditched by PSG 6 months after reaching the Champions League final. I think it's quite fortunate in terms of Chelsea's ability to bounce back, if they can bounce back in this, which they should, as you've outlined, Grant, before this quite comfortable run of fixtures to ease him in. I mean, he's been speaking about how about Lampard's legacy at Chelsea, which is a nice touch, but he's obviously looking to bounce back from being ditched by PSG, an attack-minded manager, and somebody that really will have like a high ceiling, but I sense there's the risk of a bit of a low floor too, given his spiky nature as seen at Dortmund and obviously at PSG with Leonardo clashing over team selection. Will, what do you expect from Tuchel? And as I mentioned at the very top of the show, what does he have to achieve to make this a worthwhile decision to change manager? I'm talking, Granovskaya has talked in the announcement of Tuchel about how there's so much more football and things to achieve this season. She's obviously right, but at some point there needs to be a measuring stick as to what Tuchel needs to do to make it a promising move for Chelsea moving forward. Is it just top four? Is it getting through to the last eight or even the semi-finals of the Champions League? What do you think he needs to achieve to justify this move?
Well, I've read some reports from journalists that the expectation is him to come in and get us back in the title race. I mean, Jesus, feel a bit sorry for him if that's the case. Obviously the idea is, I think, to get back into the top four. I sort of said a few weeks ago that that's always the case. It doesn't matter whether it's Lampard's manager or whether it's Scolari's manager or whoever else has been manager for us. Top four, he's got to get us back into that. And I think with a run of fixtures, he can. And Champions League, to take us as far as we can in that. That's what he'll be judged on, those two things.
FA Cup too?
And FA Cup, yeah. I mean, a trophy. That's always, Chelsea, even seasons where we struggled, we generally win a trophy. historically or recent history. So I think it's just going to be fascinating because everyone's sort of on Twitter now second guessing, like, oh, what's it, you know, how's he going to use Havertz and Werner? And I just think I haven't done a great deal of research on Tuchel, and I don't know too much about his teams, but you know, just a brief bit of research, I think he seems pretty flexible. I think towards the end at Dortmund, I just had a look today, and he's playing, switching between a 4-2-3-1 that it's like a 4-2-3-1 out of possession, becomes a 4-3-3 in possession. And then he played a 3-4-3 quite a bit towards the end of his time at Dortmund. He wasn't afraid at PSG to play quite a defensive minded midfield to allow the attacking front three, to let them off the leash and not have to sort of defend as much. Let's see what solutions he can come up with. I don't think there's any perfect ones with this squad. It's top heavy, like we've said, it's bloated. So, you know, I expect him to bring in some of the experienced players in from the cold a little bit. Rudiger will probably be, I would imagine, a back in the side, although obviously he got back into the side under Frank.
He wanted Rudiger, didn't he, at PSG? Yeah. He was one of the players, and Jorginho too. So maybe they both somehow find a way.
That's a bit worrying for me, the Jorginho thing. Mm. But reports that Gilmore's going to be sent out on loan and Jorginho is going to be straight back into the side. I mean, what I really hope is that we don't go through the same cycle that we had to sort of go through under Frank at times, where we have to go back to these experienced players that we know aren't quite good enough. It would be a nightmare if, you know, the team sheet comes out of Wolves in the next few games, Kepa's back in the side, Jorginho's back in the side with the armband. I think Havertz and Werner both starting at the moment is just not a good idea at all. They're both struggling so much. You know, Tammy on the bench, even Mason Mount on the bench. I mean, that's like a worst nightmare scenario. I can't see that happening, but no one really knows. It's going to be fascinating. And I think his first few team selections are going to be very telling as to how he's going to get on.
I think you're right. I think Jorginho is a bit of he's a different player to the one that maybe he wanted at PSG at that point. I mean, I'd like to see Gilmore given a run. I mean, Tuchel used Weigl, didn't he, at Borussia Dortmund as a sort of a diminutive sort of centre midfielder who can bounce off players, pass and move, keep the tempo high. So I think he could be an interesting player if he's allowed to sort of get a bit of credit in the bank after a couple of wins. I mean, it's an attack-minded manager, so if you remove the issue of succeeding Lampard, there is something to be excited about. I mean, this is really interesting piece by Rafa Honigstein and The Athletics, talks about Tuchel making players hold tennis balls so they didn't grab shirts during the game, cutting off corners from various parts of the pitch to make it more direct. I think that could be some sort of overlap in the way the Chelsea squad is made up. He has talked about he has a philosophy and his idealisms. I mean, that doesn't strike me as a nice match with Chelsea as a club, which is, I mean, you talk about a lack of identity after sacking Lampard. I think the identity is very clear now over a long period of time. It's the Juventus of the Premier League, isn't it? It's a team that values winning above everything else. So I think that is the culture of the club. He'll have to get the balance right. And I think he will be well-versed in adapting to that because PSG had a similar philosophy. I think it'll be really interesting to see him, how he handles the big players. I think he ditched Mauro Icardi, didn't he? And obviously he couldn't ditch Neymar or Mbappe, but it's good to see that he can have the balls to make these big moves. And like you said, Will, he can put in a more destructive midfield, a more just to protect the team and allow these attacking players to flourish. So those are my thoughts. Grant, anything that stands out to you on the hiring?
A couple of years ago, I was quite keen on him being the sort of manager we targeted. Obviously, seeing his Dortmund team being this team playing at breakneck speed and obviously he did take over from Jurgen Klopp, so he had a lot of that already ingrained in the whole identity of that club, and Chelsea don't have that. Having said that, PSG wasn't like that. His team wasn't in any way like that, because he had at least two players that were arguably far more important figures at the club than he was. So that may have maybe taught him some diplomacy, but I think he'll probably be delighted that he doesn't have to go through that and pander to these superstars in Neymar and Mbappe, and has a squad with nobody of that profile at all. So I think he'll be quite assertive in what he wants to do. That's the sort of personality he is. I think we know he falls out with, well, definitely board members and some players. So yeah, it's difficult to know which players he brings back into the picture and which ones he favors. But if he wants to play breakneck football off the ball and he wants to do it with Jorginho, it's just going to flop. So if Jorginho comes back into the picture, it's also an admission that we just have very few options in that position. I mean, we from the last couple of seasons, we've basically had Kovacic, Jorginho and Kante as two players for three spots in deeper lying midfield positions. So they're going to both play because they have to. I mean, we don't have enough numbers to actually do much about that for now. So I wouldn't, if Jorginho is back, I'm not going to read too much into it initially. Having said that, Jorginho has played 0 minutes in those two FA Cup games when the team was heavily rotated. So it's all very well having a good attitude, you know, as a player like he's generally had it at Chelsea and that Lampard's praised him for. When you get left out of those two games, I think you're going to be pissed off and probably cause some crap at the training ground. I've no doubt you would have said to Lampard, why am I not playing in these two pretty straightforward matches? So with Kante out, you know, in the Fulham game, I mean, sorry, in the Leicester game, when he played Kovacic and Mount as two deeper players, that definitely would have riled him. So maybe he will be coming back into the picture because he's a relatively big personality, which really says it all. I'm not sure. As you can tell, my thoughts are quite scattered and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on him. I think, you know, watching some of Havertz and Werner on highlights packages and bits and pieces of games wasn't enough to really know enough about them as players. So I'm not going to pretend I know enough about a manager. Unless you really follow the league week in and week out, and you see his decisions, and you follow the incidents off the pitch, and you hear the press conferences, you can't really know him. So I'm not going to prejudge too much, but I think it's reached the stage where trying to look long term, and from my perspective, is absolutely pointless. I thought we'd done that with Lampard, but I didn't realize that the club saw him as a Di Matteo figure. That was just a legend, just kind of be nice to people and get some results and then be ditched at the first sign of trouble. Di Matteo was also top of the log in his first full season. And he was fired pretty soon after that. So I think that's probably how the club saw Lampard too. So for me, yeah, it'd be nice to beat Wolves and then hopefully win some of the other winnable games that we have coming up, Burnley at home and Newcastle and Sheffield United away. I mean, he's got a really soft start. He's got Barnsley in the FA Cup. If he just does the bare minimum and gets through some results there, then we could look, things are going to look more rosy and he's going to look like the Messiah. And the board are going to look really clever to have salvaged the season. But I'm not convinced, you know, this is going to be the case.
He looks, from the outside looking in, it seems like he's very controlling, bit of a disciplinarian, you know, talking about the dieting stuff. Obviously, different principles of play, but you know, maybe there's some similarities with Conte. Falls out with the board. I mean, best case scenario is he comes in and wins. What is it we won under Conte? Like 13 games in a row and won the title. So I look forward to.
But why does the club do this? Why does the club keep flip flopping between these such different types of styles of manager? They go from disciplinarian to, you know, a people's person like Ancelotti, then they go to disciplinarian. And, you know, they keep switching back and forth between these.
We flirt with the idea of wanting to build something and build a, you know, Barcelona. I think that's what Abramovich is like obsessed with, creating like a style of play. But you can do that. I mean, like Man City have sort of built a style of play that's quite, you know, possession-based football and things like that. But you need to profile the managers properly. It's just like when the first sign of that not working, we sack the manager and then bring someone in completely different to win straight away, because ultimately that's what we want to do. We want to win straight away. So it's just like, if you look at all of the managers we've gone through, it's almost like the same cycle every single time. You know, disciplinarian short term, they fall out of the board, they go. Then we try to bring in someone who's a bit more of a philosophy manager. That doesn't go well. So yeah, I mean, you know, eventually Mourinho will be back and we'll be winning the title with Jose again.
Yeah, it's never dull, is it, at Stamford Bridge? I think that much is true. Obviously, you mentioned the easy start, Grant. I somewhat agree, but I also somewhat disagree. I mean, 3 games in 8 days is there's only so much he can really implement. I mean, he's going to have a bit of luck, I think, in terms of getting some results, even though the opposition, Wolves and Burnley, is... I mean, you say they're winnable. I mean, Burnley have really spiked in form lately. I think they're always going to be tough to beat, and Chelsea are going to have to do something productive with the ball on Sunday to win that game. Just to finish up really today, I was really interested to know what you think about Wolves and Burnley at home and then Spurs away. 3 games in 8 days. I mean, realistically, what is a positive return there?
Yeah, the thing is just, sorry to go back quickly. The one thing it sort of only occurred to me now is that, you know, we've had, three interim managers in the past. We've had Chris Hiddink, we've had Benitez, and we've had Di Matteo. And all of them, you'd say, were really pragmatic. They would play really defensively if needed to get results, and that was their brief. Hiddink was just to come in and get results, maximize a really good squad that we had. Di Matteo was the same. He selected all the big players again, and he played really defensively, and we obviously had crazy success with the FA Cup and the Champions League. Benitez is also a very defensive coach. And Avram Grant as well. Avram Grant is a hard one to pin down. I mean, we don't know how much input he was actually having. It seemed like Hank Tankata and Steve Clark were doing the coaching, and he was just the nice figurehead. But we haven't had a caretaker that's like Thomas Tuchel, that's like abrasive and trying to implement a philosophy on day one. That's not going to do whatever it takes just to get through a few results. And he also want to do that because he want to show that he can get the job beyond this season, beyond even next season. So he want to show that he can implement a playing style. And I mean, that's what we seem to do, flash between, you know, a coach who will win at all costs or a coach that has a playing style that Abramovich is, you know, this hallowed thing that Abramovich wants. So I think it's going to be a really interesting case study just to see how a coach coming in mid-season in a COVID year, with a lot of new signings, can sort of implement a philosophy, whereas a safer bet might have been someone who doesn't do that in terms of salvaging this season. I mean, I'm not saying under any circumstances I wanted Rafa Benitez. I'm just saying if there had been a coach like that, there probably are a few, even someone like Allegri would have been more pragmatic and just trying to win immediately, and to win in any style immediately, whereas Tuchel will want to win in a certain style immediately. So I don't know. For the first week, it's tough to know because, you know, his appointment, I was being quite cynical. I said he would get appointed before we get the Wolves game. And if we do win that match, then it will be his first win. And if we don't, it'll be, well, he hasn't really started work. So it'll go under Lampard's reign, you know, and he actually came in when we were 10th or something. And because it's similar to Mourinho at Spurs, you know, they were 13th, but they were actually like, 3 or 4 points or fifth. And he got a couple of wins, and then he's the man that took them from 13th to fifth. So it's important, like, not to be blinded by that. You know, like, we have winnable games, and I don't think that means we're going to breeze through them, but they are games we can win. They're not Everton away, Wolves away, Arsenal away, regardless of those teams' form, or City at home, which is the run we've had in the last, 6 or 7 games. So they're more winnable. And sorry to hijack the whole, you know, speak for ages and hijack it, but he's going to have to rotate the side just because of the schedule. And I don't know if he's definitely picking the team for the game tomorrow night, but I mean, I think it would be quite disheartening if someone like Abraham after hat-trick didn't start. So I think he may not select that side, or he might just take, you know, let Joe Edwards and Anthony Barry pick that team. And
he's taking training now. So
yeah, maybe
almost,
he will.
Almost certain he'll pick the team. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It seems like that.
They scheduled a 6 p.m. training session tonight, presumably knowing his travel arrangements. So you could be right. But
he would have been obviously, I think he's been in discussions for a while. He would have been doing his homework, watching all the games. So I have an opinion on a lot of the players going in.
Yeah.
But you're Grant, I think he'll have to rotate. So everyone will get a little audition. Everyone will get a little chance in the flesh to you know, to stake a claim, and hopefully that's conducive to free wins. You know, I think a new manager coming in, that is just always an uplift, and I think there is a bit of a clean slate. And like you said, yeah, I think everyone's going to get their chance in the next 8 days, so it'll be interesting. And hopefully it's three wins and we're right back in it. You know, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, look, I mean, well, which side would you pick if you were picking the team? Like, what would you pick? Would you pick the players that have actually been performing, you know, and look at the form and pick the team that's going to probably give more chance of winning the match in an isolated, you know, game? Or would you pick the Havertzes and the Werners that need game time to adapt? I mean, what exactly does he do? I mean, I'm interested to know what team you guys would pick and if you had to predict what actually you think he's going to do.
Yeah, I think it's this tough one, isn't it? Because presumably the conversations he's had are encouraging the board that he will get the best out of Timo Werner, Kai Havertz, and I guess Christian Pulisic maybe falls into that mold as somebody that is a player with the highest potential in that squad. So, yeah, I can throw it to you, Will, but I imagine those three have to start pretty much immediately.
I mean, he'll spread them out. I mean, if he's got any sense, he would have seen that they're both really struggling. So he won't be starting them together. And he's got the excuse not to start them together because we've got to rotate. So I think he strikes me as quite pragmatic. So I think, I can see him, again, if he's done his homework. And you sent this in our WhatsApp group, Grant, that when we've matched Wolves up, if they go with a back three, I know they've been playing with a back four a fair bit this season as well. When we've matched them up with a back three, we've had really good results against them. So, you know, he might go for a back three against Wolves. If it looks like they are, then he might change it, rotate again. You know, I think he'll probably use Werner wide. And I think it will be a case of Tammy, and then Giroud getting a chance, but then I suppose Giroud really doesn't fit in with how he wants to play. Could be that Giroud's completely discarded. I mean, as you can tell, I've got absolutely no idea what he's going to do. But I think, you know, what I would do if I was a new manager coming in, I'd give everyone a bit of a go and just balance it out and rotate where you can. And I definitely wouldn't start Havertz and Werner together because I just think that's a disaster waiting to happen. I don't think him coming in is going to magically make them adjusted to the Premier League and full of confidence. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, I've never been more intrigued to see a team sheet than 5 o'clock tomorrow. I think it's 6 o'clock kickoff. 5 o'clock tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about being a Chelsea fan. Like, it's exciting to have new coaches and to see who they pick and what style they're going to play. But it's kind of interesting from like a case study or for the three of us who try and look at the tactics of the game. And it's quite interesting to look at it from that perspective. But I think he's going to have to play Werner and Havertz just as like the fact that he's been brought in largely because he's German. I mean, you've seen the articles in the last few weeks that Chelsea will have a German coach as their next coach, that sort of article that was doing the rounds. That is a huge criteria in him being selected for this job. I'm not saying that's the only one, and there obviously were other options and some weren't available, Nagelsmann and Hasenhüttl, etc. But a German speaker was always going to be appointed for the reason that, as you say, Werner Havertz and Pulisic, who he worked with at Dortmund and who speaks German, are the players that the club wants to get the most out of. So I think you'll play the three of them. There's no real reason not to in terms of their match fitness. They're just, I mean, just two of them, I suppose all three of them are just playing crap. So I think he might just start the three of them and then the rest, almost the rest of the team is more interesting because I think it's pretty easy just to leave out Abraham and Hasenhüttl for him. And I want to see what he does in midfield.
That's the key, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you'd think three of the back line pick themselves. I mean, James is obviously way ahead of Azpilicueta at the moment, Chilwell and Thiago Silva. So does he play Rudiger? I mean, Christensen, he would know well from the Bundesliga, having been on loan there for 2 years with Mönchengladbach, and probably speaks German too after that time, so he'll know him quite well. It's the sort of player that would probably, you know, better suited to that sort of league or that style of play that Tuchel will bring in. So yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, I think we might just see like some crazy shock, like maybe we see Zuma's not in the squad even, and he starts, you know, he's got Christensen starting or Rudiger, or and Zuma's not in the picture. He's not on to fourth spot because he's not quite suited to it. Or yeah, I think it could be quite fascinating. Maybe we see Giroud miss out on the squad. Thankfully, with the nine subs, you can kind of hide his intentions a bit initially because you don't actually see guys in the stands.
Yeah, I think the midfield's the most interesting part, and it has been the last 18 months. Frank never really found a solution there. So it'd be interesting to see what he conjures up as a solution to getting the balance right. Yeah, that'll be the most interesting part for me. And yeah, who partners? And the composition of the front three. I mean, I've seen some people suggest, I sort of made a bit of a prediction today to you guys, slightly tongue in cheek, but not really. I mean, I think you could see him maybe playing like Havertz as a withdrawn, like a false nine, and then playing Werner and Pulisic wide, making runs in behind, almost like wide forwards. And then I just said to you that, you know, that's not going to work. It will end in Tammy coming on as a super sub in the next few games and scoring and him basically having to pick Tammy.
That for me might be the way to go forward in terms of you put Pulisic, Havertz and Werner in the side, and then you basically try and shield what has been the Achilles heel of the side. You mentioned the back four, but it could even be 3-4-3. You don't have a holding midfielder you can trust outside of Kante, so you use Kovacic and Mount, or maybe even, God forbid, you bring Jorginho back in a two, and then you have Thiago Silva, who he trusts and knows from his time at PSG, Rudiger and Christensen, who speak German and he might know a little more than Zuma, and you've got three centre-backs there behind a pretty fragile two, but in a shape which might match up well with Wolves and might allow that front three to prosper a little bit. I don't know. I think it could be anything, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I do like that idea, and I think the logic behind what you're saying there is extremely sound. I think that makes sense. I think another thing, it's probably a bit left field, and it's but we did see at PSG, he realized that those front players and Mbappe and Neymar were not going to defend, and he played Neymar as the false nine so that he was in central positions, and Mbappe leading the counters from the left, so you could see Werner doing the same possibly, and Havertz being the false nine. But then he had a very, very solid midfield three, often three defensive midfielders, and Herrera, Marquinhos, who's often playing in the midfield, in a midfield holding role, and then, you know, having Verratti or...
Trezeguet.
Yeah, exactly. There was always another destroyer, and it was a very broken team. It was essentially, you know, we're going to have seven defending and three attacking, or eight defending if you have Di Maria dropping in. I really don't think it's ludicrous to suggest that he could play Christensen in a Marquinhos role. It's relatively similar. He's quite good across the ground. He's got decent heights. Good, you know, that might not be a bad solution. And I think that sort of stopgap is probably the only way to actually sort out the midfield, is to actually have an actual defender who maybe puts the balance more towards the defensive side and not going to give that much on the ball, but just gives a platform for the three, you know, the three players he's been brought in to maximize, to literally just have free reign to do what they want, drift around and have other players cover for them. You know, you could imagine Mount and Kante possibly with, say, you know, Christensen holding, or Kante holding and then Kovacic and Mount playing really defensively on the sides and just letting the others just do their thing. I don't think it's a bad way to go. I just think on current form, Abraham should play on merit, because it sends such a bad message to the squad to say you can get a hat trick and then be left out of the next match. And even Hudson-Odoi is playing some of probably his best football in a Chelsea shirt. You'd also think he deserves to play. So he might have to play them and then play real team the weekend, you know, the real team he wants to play over the weekend.
I was quite relieved. I was quite encouraged to see that he used 3-4-3 quite a lot at Dortmund, because I think I've said for quite a while, and especially recently, that I think that's a system that probably suits our quite odd kind of squad, in that we're five centre-backs. You know, we've got potentially two really good wing-backs, and we've got Alonso who's sitting around, who I think hasn't showed a good attitude in this period, but is obviously a wing-back. And I think just sort of the, you know, kind of almost defending by numbers when you're back in shape is a good solution if you don't have any sort of outstanding defenders or defensive midfielders. So I think there's a chance he goes with that, and maybe we fluke it and find something that really works. But you know, because I think Kante and Mount could work as a two. I think they've got enough. They're multifunctional enough. They can do, you know, a bit of everything to do that. Gilmore can play in a two. Kovacic and Jorginho, I think, together have worked better in a two. Even though everyone thinks Jorginho is this like regista type player, I don't see it. So yeah, I think there's a chance that is maybe what he goes with tomorrow, and then maybe that's what we go with for the foreseeable. But I have absolutely no idea.
And that's about all we've got time for today. Obviously, a lot to digest, and I think it's been quite therapeutic for all of us to dive into Lampard's legacy and also a little bit on what Tuchel's impact at the club and what the future holds. But yeah, thanks for joining today, guys. It's been a really enjoyable chat. I think you can leave us a review on iTunes. I think we've seen all 5-star reviews at the moment, so keep that up. I really appreciate it. Any questions, you can leave in the reviews or get us at Palpable Pod on Twitter. Until next time, in what's going to be a busy period for Chelsea, we'll be back in a few days or next week. Thank you for listening.